WBOB.
The following program is sponsored. The opinions and statements made by the hosts and guests do not necessarily reflect the views of WBOB or its parent company, the Chesapeake Portsmouth Broadcasting Corporation.
The president doubling, tripling, quadrupling down another $200 billion of tariffs on Chinese goods and products that they're dumping into the U.S. This is a mathematical formula here. The president can't lose. This is brilliant. Every time the Chinese retaliate, just keep just one-upping them into oblivion because we're giving them $550 billion of trade deficit. They want our consumers. Keep doing it. Eventually, they'll cave. And the president knows this because unfortunately he's got all the cards. So it's like you're in a poker game and you've got a royal flush and somebody's got like four jacks or something. I mean, they can keep up. You're going to keep up with them. Eventually you're going to win, right? Because you have the best hand. And that's where the president is here. And it's brilliant. And, you know, he came in as the great disruptor. He's disrupting everything. Goes to NATO, chiding Germany. He's like, let's pay up, right? You're supposed to pay 2%. You're paying 1.3. Well, we'll pay you in 2030. No, I don't think so. No, I'm not. This is, you know, we're done with debt. I used to do debt in the old days. Now I want the cash. Pony up. By the way, you're spending billions of dollars giving it to the Russian Federation for pipelines and gas. So then I'm going to pay for your defense. Our taxpayers are going to pay to defend you against Russia, who you got a pipeline with, who you're paying hundreds of billions of dollars to? I don't think so. Basically what he said, same thing here with the tariffs. Joining us now to break this down, though, our good friend, Dan D'Amico. Dan's a cool guy. Let me tell you, he's been fighting this battle with us. There's only a handful of us in America that are Republicans that have been fighting this battle on these unfair trade deals. Me, Dan D'Amico is going to be with us now, Curtis Ellis, Pat Buchanan, and Trump. So finally, we got the upper hand now, right? Finally, people taking us seriously because it's working. Dan D'Amico is going to be with us. He's a former trade advisor to the Trump presidential campaign. He's a current trade advisor to the United States Trade Representative. He's chairman of the Coalition for a Prosperous America. Oh, I love that. Prosperous America. Who's not for that? And he's a retired CEO of Nucor Corporation, the nation's largest steel producer. All that wrapped into one, and he's with us now to break this down. Dan D'Amico. Hey, Dan, good to have you, man.
Good to be here, John. Thanks for having me.
Dan, I know you're fired up about this. Look, the president just levied another, or says he's going to, through Robert Lighthouse, the U.S. trade representative, another $200 billion in Chinese goods and products. He's put another 10 to 25% tariff on them. Now, everybody's all up in arms. But, you know, since this has started, like Wall Street went down a little bit. Now people are realizing this is a good thing for our jobs. That's stable. Chicken Little hasn't come. The sky hasn't fallen. Everybody's not dead as we go through this. But my calculus here, Dan, is that we have a $550 billion trade deficit. That means our money goes to them plus $550 bill, which means we're buying a lot more stuff from them, $550 bill, than they are for us. So as the Chinese retaliate, where does this end?
Well, listen, for over a year, the administration, Trump's administration, has been patiently urging China to stop its unfair trade practices, open up its markets, and engage in true market competition. And this has been going on now for some 20-plus years, where China has engaged in a trade war with us. President Trump is the first American president to engage in this trade war. We didn't start it. We've been the victim of it. It's decimated our middle class, our manufacturing sector. They steal our intellectual property and so on and so on. And so the president worked for the last year to make an impression upon the Chinese that, hey, listen, we're serious about this. This has got to change. Your behavior's got to change. You promised to do that when you joined the WTO back in the 90s, and you have completely failed to live up to those promises. The day of reckoning is here. We have no choice. It's a matter of our economic success and national defense going forward, support to our nation. And we're here, and we're all in on this trade thing. You totally ignored us. You didn't work with us at all over the last 12 months. We had no other choice. We're not going to be like other administrations and just say, okay, thanks for doing nothing. And this $200 billion additional products that they're going to put a 10% tariff on. And by the way, that 10% is 10% today. That doesn't need to, it can be higher than that. But that's what he's asked the USTR to do a study on and to have the legal process that is necessary for us, him to go through. And these will be imposed in the fall if there's not some significant movement on China's part to live up to the promises it made and stop being the world's trade cheater.
Well, look, they're not going to do it because they keep retaliating. So the opponents to this, Dan, let's just talk about the other side here. So the opponents to this say, look, the president is starting a needless trade war. Yeah, so there's a $550 billion trade deficit and, you know, $850 billion annually with everybody, $550 with China. You know, so what? That doesn't matter. We're getting cheap goods in. Prices are down. Hey, if you get into this thing, it's going to hurt farmers. They're not going to be able to sell soybeans to Beijing. Prices are going to go up. You're going to pay more for a six-pack of PBR. And, you know, the people that make auto parts for your cars, those are going to go up. So, you know, it's going to erase the tax cut, put the economy in a tizzy, and the stock market's going to crash, the sky's going to fall, and we're all going to be dead. How do you respond to that?
I don't know. The same people have been saying that we're all going to be dead because of what Trump's doing now for well over a year. And the last time I checked, the population was still growing. my basic response is it's all Chicken Little. The sky is falling. Would have, might, should, could, maybe. The reality is we don't have a choice anymore. Things have gotten so bad with the theft of IP that it's affecting not only our ability to innovate in the future, but also to defend ourselves when so much of our supply chain for whether it be our infrastructure, for our military, our communications, is at risk and it's getting worse. And it would have been one thing if the current president of China, who's now president for life, would have said, hey, let's sit down and let's work things out. But instead, they've doubled down, quadrupled down with their China 2025 policy with their stated aims, the world. Not to be a partner in global trade, but to dominate all the industries of the future. And they've laid the groundwork for being able to do that by stealing most of everything that they've got. They haven't developed it. They've stolen it. If you don't believe me, take a look at some of the military hardware, the planes that they have out there. They're literally exact duplicates of ours because they've stolen it from our national defense manufacturers and from our government. This issue is much bigger than any short-term pain that we're going to experience. We did not start a trade war. You said that. They say that. The trade war has been waged against us since they joined the WTO over 23 years ago.
Right.
We are just engaging in that now and saying enough's enough. Time to stop, time to play by the rules and become a true member of the free and open market community in the world and not a trade mercantilist whose goal is to basically conquer the world economically. And as a result of that, as you all know, And as you well know, if you don't have a strong economy, you don't have a strong national defense, you don't have a strong military, you're not a world leader. Last time I checked, I don't think the world wants China, the communist Chinese, to be running the world.
Well, Dan DiMicco, you hit it on the head. We're with Dan DiMicco. He's a former trade advisor to the Trump campaign. He's a current trade advisor to the United States Trade Representative Bob Lighthizer's office. And he's also the chairman of the Coalition for a Prosperous America, CEO. Well, it's now former and retired, so let's just end that double negative right of any student is listening to me. They'd be like, excuse me, the retired. So you get your English right here, John. Retired CEO of the Nucor Corporation, which the largest steelmaker in the United States. So he was CEO of that. So it's like a big deal, and he's with us now. So, Dan, the bottom line is, look, China entered the argument to bring China into the WTO. Is, hey, they're going to get the WTO. They're going to engage in free trade. They want to build a market. They're going to want people to have access to their market. They want access to other people's. They're going to get into the WTO. They're going to play nice. They're going to behave. It's going to change their outlook. They're going to become a democracy. Everything is going to be rose petals. Their people will be free. Life will be good. Well, none of that happened. They did the exact opposite. They got in.
Absolutely.
They weaseled it. They cheated. They stole. They manipulated. They do what they do. They're a communist country run by a dictator, right? That happens to have the title of president. The guy's a dictator. This is a communist country out for world domination, and they have, you know, China, what is it, China 2025, which is basically dominate all the futuristic industries in the world, dominate them, control their pricing, and by dominating that, they dominate everything. And so you got to go to them to buy anything because they've shut your industries down, and that's what they're attempting to do in the U.S. And the president has finally called them out on it. And put some teeth behind it. You know, Obama complained about he didn't do anything. The whole Bush family, I don't know what they did. They were all asleep at the wheel, right? But nobody's done anything except now, right?
I absolutely right. That this is the first president since Ronald Reagan to stand up for American workers, American manufacturing, and the future well-being of this country, its economic security, and its national security. First president since Reagan, regardless of past Republican or Democratic presidents in between the two.
All right.
And the American people get it. That's why they put him in office. He's delivering on his promises. The Chinese, listen, there's nothing wrong with a country wanting to be a leader. There's nothing wrong with them wanting to be a player in the world economically. But the problem is China's said one thing and has done completely the opposite, shown themselves not to be a global player that abides by the rules they agreed to, that access to the world's economy and the world's markets. They've done just the opposite, like you said. And enough is enough. And if we allow it to continue, whether you and I are alive to see it, we allow it to continue the way it's been going, this entire country of ours is in grave national security, and so will be the world. These are not our friends. They are competitors that believe in doing whatever it takes to win, and they have shown that and proven that. The world knows it, okay? The problem is everybody's got so much invested in China, they're afraid to say with a mouthful, all right? And it's time for the world to say enough's enough. And China goes around trying to make itself look like it's the real champion of free trade, when what they are is the real champion of trade mercantilism, which is the exact opposite of free trade. And the press gives credence to that by reporting it that way instead of challenging them. There's been too many China enablers over the last 30 years with good intentions that China would be a reasonable player in the world economy, that they abide by the rules that they agreed to, to have open markets, to be a market economy.
And they didn't do it.
Dominated by national state-owned companies.
Right.
China, every time you turn around, has basically put their finger in the eye of the world saying, hey, I know what we said. We ain't going to do it. We're going to do what we want. We're going to take what we can. And if we can't take it, we'll buy it. And we'll steal it. We're going to build ourselves into a world power.
Right.
And to hell with everybody else and to hell with the current leadership in the world, in spite of the fact that they said they would be a good player, fair player in the global economy. They've done just the opposite. Enough's enough. Thank God Trump is standing up to it.
Right.
He's got the American people behind him, despite all of the
right.
Chicken Little stuff that's out there.
Dan, you're spot on. Thank you very much, Dan DiMicco, former CEO of Nucor Corporation, the largest steel company in the United States, and he's also now an advisor to the USTR. And Bob Lighthizer, thank you, Dan, for being with us. You can follow Dan on Twitter at Dan R. DiMicco. That's DiMicco with all I's, DiMicco. Dan, it's always good to have you on and show your perspective, sir. Thank you.
Thank you, John. Keep up the good work.
Joining us now, Bob Poduszek. Bob is, he's a bigwig, as you know, in the Republican Party, National Party. Bob is the co-chair of the Republican National Committee. He's from Ohio. He was the Trump chairman in Ohio, winning that big key state. Bob, good to have you.
Hey, John, thanks for having me on. I noticed, just checked the standings here, and I see your Astros are killing it, crushing it.
Well, we're 30 games up. We blew a 3-0 lead yesterday, a gem by Verlander, 7 innings, 2 hits, no runs. Ken Giles comes in, top of the ninth, our so-called closer, can't get a single out. They score 3 runs, go up 3-2. We tie it in the bottom of the ninth. Then they go up again, and then we get a 2-run walk-off by Bergman in the bottom of the 10th to win. But we got to get a closer. We got to get a closer.
Hey, you got time though, man. You're where you want to be though at this time of the year.
Yeah, we're up by 3. We got 30 games up now. What about your own team? You feeling a little bit better now?
Yeah, I'm a Dodgers
fan. I know you're a Dodgers fan.
So you know
they're starting to win now.
The West is tight.
They're starting to win a little bit.
Yeah.
I mean, look,
yeah,
I think.
Yeah. No. They.
Go ahead.
They got a slow start, but it's coming around for them. But you know, my favorite sport this time of year is politics. Though coming up the midterm elections.
I'm predicting that I think the Republicans are going to hold on to the House, 3, maybe 5, 6 seats. Could be 2. It's going to be very close, obviously. But you know, Bob, you're a student of history, all right? And with taking your Republican hat off. Co-chair of the RNC. Look, there is no way on God's green earth the Democrats in this climate shouldn't pick up 50 or 60 seats just based on history, retirement, swing districts. But it's like how to grab defeat from the jaws of victory, Bob. I mean, if the minority leader took the entire Democratic caucus on vacation to Australia for 4 months, they have a chance to win. But they can't get out of their own way. Now they're calling themselves the Socialist Party. What is going on with these people, Bob?
I really think that they've kind of lost their minds here when it comes to President Trump. I mean, they are all in on being the opposite of what President Trump is, and most Americans are tired of that. They think things are too partisan in Washington. They want to see some things get done. But you somehow get the feeling that if President Trump invented a cure for cancer, the Democrats would oppose it. And that's just not the right place for this. But to your point about socialism, I mean, the far left wing has taken over the Democratic Party. There's just no doubt about it. And you're seeing that transformation take place. And that's bad for candidates because the United States is not a left wing country.
No, I mean, they're not. And you look at Tom Perez, the Democratic chairman, basically your counterpart there, who said that the socialist, that B. Crowley in New York, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, that was
right.
The future of the Democratic Party. And I mean, she's basically said, I'm a socialist, right? I mean, she's calling for the socialization of the economy. So what is going on?
It's really where the Democrat Party has gone. It is if you look back, the values of the Republican Party are not that much different than the values of the United States in the 50s, 60s, and 70s. I mean, they're conservative principles that have stood the test of time, but it's the Democrat Party that has really shifted to the left wing ever since they started down the pathway of the Great Society and the War on Poverty. They've continued to move to the left. And what happens is the most extremist part of that party keeps trying to they're trying to outdo each other. A prime example is Dianne Feinstein, who is served in the United States Senate for multiple terms. In California, the Democrat Party in California didn't think she was liberal enough to earn their endorsement. And it wasn't that they didn't endorse a sitting United States senator running for re-election. They were two votes away from endorsing her opponent.
Right.
Because she's not left-wing enough. Feinstein's not left-wing enough. I mean, what's more left-wing than Dianne Feinstein? Chairman Mao? I mean, come on.
Bob, it's crazy. And, we're in Virginia. I'm in D.C., but I live in Virginia. So our governor, Terry McAuliffe, he was a pretty good governor. I know everybody gets mad at me when I say that, but he was a good governor.
Yeah.
But he's running for president, right? Well, he can't be the governor of Virginia that he was pro-jobs, pro-wages,
right,
pro-pipeline, pro-energy, and run for president, right? He can't. He'll finish 10th, right? So he sends a tweet. Let me read you the tweet he sends out yesterday. And this is McAuliffe's a centrist, right? Sends out this tweet. Mm-hmm. The nomination of Judge Brett Kavanaugh will threaten the lives of millions of Americans for decades to come and will morph our Supreme Court into a political arm of the right-wing Republican Party. Bob Petrucci, can you tell me who the millions of Americans who are going to die if this guy becomes the Supreme Court Justice?
It's the crazy talk that's what the Democrats have to do to energize their base, and you're right. That's why Terry McAuliffe will not get the nomination for the Democrat Party in 2020 is because he's not, his record as governor contradicts the kind of left wing activism that the Democrats expect and demand. I mean, look at the Congressman Dan Lipinski up from the 3rd Congressional District in Illinois. He served in the House for 7 years, and the Democrat campaign committee tried to take him out. He's an incumbent Democrat, but because he's pro-life, they tried to beat him in a primary. Now, he held on, but that's what happens to Democrats that are anything close to resembling moderates, that their party purges them, and they try to shut down their voices and only get those candidates that are can appeal to the far-wing left-wing part of their party.
Bob, I tell you what, it's crazy. You guys are going to hang on. I don't know how you're going to do this, but I'm telling you, I'm going to be laughing on election night, November 8th, because you're going to hold the House. Bob, I think you guys are going to pick up like 6 seats in the U.S. Senate. I mean, every one of these red states are going down for them.
Yeah, I think you're right, John. I feel it. It's been that way for a couple months. The economy is so strong. The popularity of the president has gone up. He's doing what he said he would do on the campaign, and he's being tough. He's being tough with our opponents overseas, and he's being tough with our allies. He's standing up for America. Standing up for Americans on trade. You had the fellow from Nucor Steel. I mean, he's out there defending America's interests. This is what he said he'd do on the campaign. Promises made, promises kept. And all of this, I think, portends to us having a good midterm election.
Well, with your leadership, it's going to happen. Bob, keep up the great work. What a time for this segment. Thank you so much, Bob Petrucci. He's the co-chair of the Republican National Committee and was the chairman of the Trump Ohio campaign, the big winner campaign.
Radio, AM 600, 101.1 FM, WBOB.
With SRN News, I'm Ron DeRockstra. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo says there's no reason to cancel Monday's meeting between President Trump and Russian President Putin, despite new charges that 12 Russian intelligence officers hacked into Democratic email accounts during the 2016 presidential election. Pompeo made his remarks to journalists while flying from Mexico to Helsinki, Finland. Meanwhile, Homeland Security Secretary Kirstjen Nielsen says there's no sign Russia's targeting the upcoming midterm elections for cyber attacks with the scale and scope it used in 2016. Nielsen spoke today at a Philadelphia conference of U.S. state secretaries of state from across the country. A wildfire burning near the west end of Yosemite National Park in the Sierra National Forest has closed Highway 140 from Mid Pines to El Portal. The fire began Friday evening, burned about 130 acres by early this afternoon. This is SRN News.
Download WBOB's mobile app for free from your app store. Powered by Duval County Judicial Candidate Kimberly Sadler.
Here's some great news. If you missed the deadline to sign up for a healthcare plan, or more importantly, if you signed up for a plan that you're just not happy with, you still have a choice. It's called MediShare. MediShare is a Christian healthcare sharing program. It's been around for 25 years. They have hundreds of thousands of members all across the country. And get this, over the years, MediShare members have shared more than $2.5 billion of each other's medical bills. Best of all, you could save a lot of money with MediShare. The typical savings for a family is about $500 a month. Your savings may be less or more, but think about what you could do with that extra money every month. So if you think you're stuck with a high-cost health plan that doesn't have much to offer, think again. You can join MediShare anytime, so call them today and check it out. Here's the number to find out more. There's no pressure. They're super easy to talk to. 877-64-BIBLE. That's 877-64-BIBLE. 877-64-BIBLE.
Hey, folks, Dave Ramsey here. Stop wasting money on bottled water and hard water costs. Get yourself a Kinetico system, the only non-electric water-powered hybrid on the market to both soften and filter your water. Go see my friends at CGC Water, a third-generation family business for over 65 years, and your local authorized Kinetico dealer. With the Kinetico system, you can save money on water heating bills and cleaning supplies. You can spend less time cleaning soap scum, lime scale, and spots on dishes and glasses. It removes chlorine so your skin and hair feel softer, and it helps prevent laundry fading. Plus, a Kinetico system can actually lengthen the life of your appliances that use water up to 50%, and it protects your pipes from buildup. You can trust Kinetico. Get a Kinetico system today and start saving money. Call CGC Water at 904-645-6060 or visit cgcwater.com.
Hi, folks. This is Martin Parlato, and I host the Lighthouse Retirement Hour right here in Jacksonville, WBOB, AM 600 and FM 101.1. Parts 1 and 2 Saturdays at noon and again Sunday morning starting at 9 a.m. Look, the annuity guys and the senior this or the senior that are out in force, and they're trying to separate you from your money. We don't sell index annuities, and we don't sell fear. Head over to the website, lighthouseretirement.com. Click the blue button to make an appointment with me, and then I can help you.
The latest traffic and weather on WBOB, your 2018 election authority.
There's an accident on the East Beltway 295 southbound. That's the ramp to Heckscher Drive on the north side. Also another accident in the clearing stages on the East Beltway 295 northbound before North Main Street. Be careful there. Some heavy showers moving through Metro Jacks heading out toward the ocean. Scattered showers will continue tonight. 77 degrees now in Jacksonville. I'm AJ on Talk Radio WBOB.
Joining me now, Gregory Giangelo. He is the executive director of the Log Cabin Republicans. That is the number one gay organization for the Republican Party. They're gay Republicans, and they've been with us a very long time. They're great people. And Gregory, good to have you with us.
I appreciate you and your listeners kind of working through the technical difficulties, and I'm really happy to be back on the show today.
Okay, Gregory Anthony, the executive director of Log Cabin Republicans. So let's talk about the choice of Judge Brett Kavanaugh. Now, the Democrats running around, I was on CNN last night, Gregory, and on the set, I mean, their hair was on fire. Hysteria, yeah. Delirium, frenzy. Many of them saying on CNN that they were, you know, sitting in there and saying, They're going to roll back gay marriage. They're going to eliminate that. They're going to roll back all the gay rights that have been gained, et cetera. I mean, just absolute craziness. With Judge Kavanaugh, do you fear any of that, any of the accusations?
Not at all. Not at all. Not in the least. I slept very soundly last night, John, because, you know, in Kavanaugh, you have someone who literally has never issued any sort of opinion either way, you know, either something that you can one might consider pro-LGBT, like Kennedy's Supreme Court marriage decisions, or something anti-LGBT, something that could harm the LGBT community. There's none of that. What do we have to go on with Kavanaugh? Well, he clerked for Kennedy. He clerked for the justice who has issued the most opinions in support of equality for the LGBT community than any judge in American history ever. So I think that should give us some insight into his personality. I do think it's really interesting that, although certainly not unexpected, that you had every LGBT leftist organization in the United States ready to go and click the send button on their email fundraising blasts, calling Kavanaugh or any of the other justices that were in contention for this nomination an anti-LGBT bigot who would roll back equal rights for not just LGBT Americans, but all Americans. And that's concerning to me. That's the concerning thing to me, is the language and the rhetoric that continues to be ramped up on the left. And it doesn't matter if it's the LGBT left that's stoking the flames here, or people like Senator Jeff Merkley, who on the steps of the Supreme Court last night said that Kavanaugh was going to usher a path to tyranny into the United States. I mean, you were with the CNN folks, but you know, the news today, and I was watching last night from my apartment, you know, Shannon Bream on Fox News was almost violently attacked by the mobs that were out in the Supreme Court, mobs that had already assembled and were going to protest even before they knew who the nominee was. I mean, you know, if that's the way that the left is going to respond to Kavanaugh, Mitch McConnell might as well just call a vote today and get this whole the drama and the formality of it all over with, because Democrats haven't just made up their mind already to oppose this nominee. They made up their minds two weeks ago, specifically when Kennedy announced that he'd be stepping down.
I think you're right. And it's been shameful, some of the shenanigans that have gone on. And if you look at Kavanaugh's rulings, I mean, there's nothing to suggest that he's going to overturn any of the gains by the LGBT community that's been made with civil rights at all, none of them. And in fact, I would go a step further and say that Kavanaugh has said on numerous occasions that he believes in what he called the power of precedent, whether it's Roe v. Wade or gay marriage. I think this has already been settled. I don't see Kavanaugh being someone that's going to agitate to overturn any of this. I don't. And as you pointed out, there's no historical perspective, no historical rulings that he's made that have been anti-gay or anti-gay marriage or anti-LGBT. So I don't even know what they're protesting.
Exactly. And not like, you know, even putting aside the gay stuff and the LGBT stuff, this is something of a milquetoast nominee. You know, he's not as much of a flashpoint that someone like, say, Barrett would be had she been nominated for this position. Mm-hmm. He doesn't have a litany of controversial decisions, and it's going to be very difficult for, you know, these Republican moderate senators like Susan Collins and Lisa Murkowski, who up until last night Democrats had been placing all their hopes on to stop any Trump nominee from going through. I think it's also going to be difficult for folks like Democrats like Manchin and Donnelly and Heitkamp not to vote for this nominee. I mean, you know, and that's the thing, too. So when you talk about the protests that you see from the left and the hysterics and the meltdowns, that's really all that they can do at this point. You know, Kavanaugh is all but assured to be confirmed. He's not a controversial nominee, as many in the left-wing media and many on the left would have you believe. He's a pretty mellow jurist, and that ultimately, I think, will make it extremely difficult not only for Democratic senators and all Republicans to oppose him. But I think it's also going to shed light for the many Americans who do not consider themselves Democrats or Republicans, who are independent voters, when they see the way that the left tries to dump gasoline on a fire and ratchet up hysteria to the point of the verge of, and in some cases actually implementing violent behavior on the streets, it's going to have an extremely detrimental effect on Democrats' chances of retaking the House later this year, and it's going to have the effect of essentially killing off all chances of them retaking the White House in 2020. So from my perspective, the Democrats should keep going, because all this, the hysteria, the protests, and the twisting of truths that you get about Kavanaugh, a good man, a solid justice, a principled man, is only ultimately going to serve to bolster Republicans' chances on Election Day in 2018 and 2020.
You know, Gregory Tiangelo, you're so right on this. As you were talking, I was thinking about the fact that the Democrats are just snatching defeat right from the jaws of victory. I mean, if you asked me 2 months ago how many seats they would win in the House in the midterms, yeah, I would say 50 to 60, maybe 65. I mean, it was going to be a blue wave like you've never seen. You almost got to get back to Newt Gingrich. And what was that? 94. Right? Yeah, you almost got to get back to that. But now they're just, with all the shenanigans they're doing, they're just fumbling it away. By the way, we're with Gregory Tiangelo. He's the executive director of the Log Cabin Republicans in Washington, D.C. That is the oldest and most prestigious gay rights group who are Republicans in the United States. They've been around a very long time. So let me ask you this, Gregory. Will the Log Cabin Republicans take a position on Judge Kavanaugh after you guys have a meeting? How will this work?
I think it behooves our organization right now to kind of be agnostic on Kavanaugh. I mean, we'll see what he says in his hearings. I can tell you this: we're certainly not taking a posture of opposing this this nomination. Mm-hmm. I think the man is deserving of a hearing as soon as he's able to sit down and get some one-on-one time with members of the United States Senate. But certainly, again, from my perspective, looking at the prolific history of judgments, let's keep in mind this man, you know, while he hasn't exactly authored a ton of controversial opinions, you know, this is a man who has been a jurist and worked in the legal profession for decades. So there's certainly, you know, this was the one hesitation I heard from a lot of Republicans on Capitol Hill about his potential nomination was that there's a massive paper trail when it comes to him. There's a lot for opposition researchers and Democrats who are out for blood to pour over. But nowhere in that litany of decisions and in a career that spans decades do you have any instance where he exhibited anti-gay animus. I think that's something that I think is a positive indicator on his nomination. And as we said with Gorsuch when he was nominated by Trump last year, the man deserves a hearing, and I think that it behooves the members of the United States Senate, Democrat and Republican, to give him that.
Well, let's see what happens when he has it. I mean, I kind of agree with you in the fact that he's got so many writings, so many decisions, so many opinions that he rendered, over 300 of them, that, of course, the Democrats' opposition are going to pour through. But we were talking about this earlier, Gregory, and it would have been easier for the president to pick someone else without this kind of a deep record. But I think he's done the opposite. You know, there's an interesting thing about President Trump. He's an anti-elitist, no question about it. I mean, he doesn't like the elites in Washington, and even when he was in New York. So he's an anti-elitist. But he is a credentialist. I'll call him a credentialist because this president is very motivated by your credentials, what you've accomplished, where you went to school, what your grades are. I mean, people that have interviewed with him have been asked that question, like he's asked, you know, GPA averages and things like that. So he believes that success comes from your background, your education, your work ethic, your credentials. And I think, you know, he looked at Kavanaugh and this guy, I mean, somebody said that this, I think I just had Corey Lewandowski on. I didn't realize this. He's like, the guy has been a Washington, D.C. circuit court judge for a dozen years, right? 12. And he's 52. That means he obtained that judgeship, which is powerful, when he was 40 years old. I mean, Gregory, that's pretty impressive.
Yeah, I mean, and it's funny, you know, when you look at the, I'll call it this, and the embarrassment of riches that we have as conservatives when it comes to the potential nominees that Trump has with, you know, this famous list, which, by the way, I would add, I believe is probably likely the most transparent process we've ever had in the history of the United States in the selection and vetting of a Supreme Court justice. But throughout that list are, you know, it's not just Kavanaugh. You know, there are numerous people who are in their 50s, some just in their 40s, who have already established strong constitutional conservative bona fides and the respect of their peers, regardless of whether their peers were nominated by a Democratic president or a Republican president. I think it's really interesting what President Trump is doing, because in addition to credentials and accomplishments, he is looking for the best of the best, the cream of the crop when it comes to the circuit court nominees and the Supreme Court nominees. And I think the large part of the cream of the crop for this president is, and his advisors, is the people who have accomplished the most in the shortest period of time. I mean, you have now, you know, between Gorsuch and now Kavanaugh, assuming that he's going to get confirmed, justices that will be on the court probably close to the end of my life, you know, likely the end of many others, and then lifelong appointments to circuit court positions around the country. I mean, these are, you know, I can't believe we're only a year and a half into Trump's presidency right now, so who knows what his grand legacy is going to be when all is said and done. But certainly, just over the course of the last 18 months,
it's going to be
I think one of his greatest legacies is already cemented in stone, and that is going to be bringing a conservative judiciary, not just to the Supreme Court of the United States, but to courts all across the United States with lifetime appointments of highly qualified individuals.
We've seen by lower court rulings how that matters. We just saw one the other day as far as immigration enforcement is concerned, a lower judge court ruling that the administration's plan of apprehending illegals that come across the border and keeping them with their children in detention until such time as they can get the paperwork evaluated for asylum, because they didn't do it the right way and go to the port of entry like you're supposed to. That's the law. The judge struck that down. So now the administration can't even implement their zero tolerance policy. They're handcuffed with that. That's going to end up going to the Supreme Court over time. But you're right. I mean, the president has filled these lower court judgeships at a breathtaking pace. And you're right. 18 months in, I mean, if he gets reelected, I mean, he can influence the entire judgeships, top and bottom, in the entire United States for decades. So it's going to be interesting. No question about it.
Yeah, and not just influence, you know, because I think actually, I mean, this is, you know, when you have liberals, they want the courts to influence things. I mean, what we're going to have in a post-Trump presidency, you know, in 2025, I believe, is courts throughout the United States and the highest court in the United States, the Supreme Court, that will be dominated by constitutional conservatives, people that look at the original text of the Constitution of the United States, and if it is not enumerated in that original text of the Constitution and its antecedent amendments, these are things that go back to the states to be decided, because that's what the founding fathers wanted all along. That's it. I mean, you know, I'm not a constitutional lawyer by any stretch of the imagination. I'm not even a lawyer, but and I don't mean to demean people who are. But it's pretty straightforward what it means to be a constitutional conservative and what it means to be an expert in constitutional law. It's all about the text of that original document. And the reason why you're seeing the left melt down into the histrionics and the madness that they have been really over the course of, you know, ever since Election Day 2016, but it's only been amplified ever since, and certainly with this pick of Kavanaugh or anyone who Trump would have nominated or will nominate. You likely have some more nominees to the highest court in the land. But when the left looks at the law and when they look at judges, they see political activists or potential political activists, and they see people who can potentially create law out of whole cloth by twisting themselves into contortions and viewing the Constitution as the, quote, living document. But I think what you're going to get with Trump is a legacy of judges who adhere to constitutionalist conservative principles, and that's something that any conservative or even any libertarian should be celebrating.
You're right. We're out of time. I want to thank Gregory T. Angelo for being with us. He's the executive director of the Log Cabin Republicans. If people want more information, Gregory, where do they go?
Logcabin.org. Check us out on Twitter at LogCabinGOP, Facebook.com/LogCabinGOP.
Joining us now, Corey Lewandowski. Corey, the former campaign manager, the guru of the Trump for president nomination. He did it. He's the guy. He turned the lights on, first hire, put the whole thing together when Trump was 100-1 to win the nomination. I was there when he came down the escalator, and he ran the campaign, as you know, through the convention and then became a contributor with CNN and all that good stuff. Now, Corey is a senior advisor to Vice President Pence's Great America Committee, the GAC PAC, and he is with us now. But he's also the author of one of the best books written, and it's a great summer read. It's called Let Trump Be Trump. You got to read this book. It's so much fun. You're never going to put it down. And it's a great book because it takes you through the whole thing, beginning to end, how it started, the idea, how he came to be, and the first interview he had with Trump. It's by Corey Lewandowski and David Bossi. It's called Let Trump Be Trump. You can get it at your favorite bookstore, or you can get it at Amazon, wherever you want. But buy it, because go to the pool, read it. You read the first couple of pages, and you'll be like, hey, this is really cool, and you'll not put it down. So you got to get that Let Trump Be Trump. Corey Lewandowski joining us now. Great to have you, Corey.
Hey, John, it's great to be back with you. What a big week again. It seems like every week I come on your show and we say, the president had an amazing week last week, and here we are. It's only Tuesday, and he's had an amazing week already.
I don't know how he does it or how we do it, but you're right. The last five times you've come on, you've been like, wow, this is the biggest week ever. Now, this is the biggest week ever again. The Kavanaugh pick, talk about credentials, qualifications, and 300 rulings. I mean, the president not shying away from defending this guy's record, right?
No, that's exactly right. And look, I never get tired of winning, John. I know the president said we might happen someday. I'm not tired of winning yet. But look at what he did with Brett Kavanaugh. And if you have any inclination of just how good of a judge he has been, if you have any reservations, pick up the failing New York Times today and look at the editorial from his former law professor, a liberal Democrat who voted for Hillary Clinton and supported Barack Obama, and said that Judge Kavanaugh is perhaps, next to Neil Gorsuch and Merrick Garland, the best choice that Donald Trump could have made for the highest court in the land of any person in the country. He's a Yale law professor. He taught Justice Kavanaugh, and soon to be Justice Kavanaugh, hopefully. And he has the highest praise for him because of his intellect, because of his ability to understand the Constitution, adhere to the constitutional principles. And that is a glowing recommendation from a big liberal, which is very, very hard to find.
It is very hard to find, especially for the New York Times to have that. Look, I don't see this nomination getting derailed in the U.S. Senate, Corey. I want to get your take on it, but I think there's not a single Republican that is going to vote the other way or vote no on Judge Kavanaugh just because of his credentials, his record. There's no reason to do it. And I know they're targeting Susan Collins and Lisa Murkowski, but I think both of them at the end are going to vote in favor of confirmation. And then I think you're going to pick up four or five Democrats once they realize this thing is a foregone conclusion. What say you?
I agree with you 100%. And, you know, John, it's amazing to me because you look at Judge Kavanaugh, who, by the way, is 52 years old and has been on the D.C. bench for 12 years. If that doesn't make me feel like a slacker, okay? The guy was on the bench at 40, and I know he went to Yale Law and Yale undergrad, so he's a really smart guy. But you're going to see these senators, and what this administration did, which was such a brilliant move, is they made John Kyle, the former U.S. senator, the Sherpa for this individual, meaning the person is going to take him around the U.S. Senate and introduce him to those members who many of them already know him from his tenure in Washington. But very specifically, it puts Jeff Flake, the U.S. senator from Arizona, in a difficult position because John Kyle, who was the number two person in the U.S. Senate, is from the state of Arizona. He knows Jeff Flake. Mm-hmm. He knows Judge Kavanaugh, and he's going to ensure that Jeff Flake is not going to politicize this, but give
the judge a fair chance in the Judiciary Committee. I think you're going to get all the Republicans. I think Heidi Heitkamp is going to come on board. Mm-hmm. I think John Tester, if he votes for the judge, will have a much better chance at his own reelection efforts in Montana. Mm-hmm. I think you're going to see Manchin from West Virginia get on board. You might see Claire McCaskill get on board. You might see the senator from Florida get on board, who's in a battle right now with Governor Scott. Bill Nelson may get on board, because this candidate is so superiorly qualified, there is no reason that we don't have 60, 70 or more votes. And, John, you have to remember, there was a time not that long ago when Supreme Court justices would receive bipartisan support and get 80 and 90 votes in the U.S. Senate, not 50 or 51.
Right.
And this is the type of candidate who should receive that, those numbers as well.
Well, let me ask you this, Corey Lewandowski, with us now. What do the never-Trumpers in the Republican Party have to say now? The Evan McMullins, the Jeff Flakes jumping up and down about Trump isn't conservative enough. I mean, you look at Judge Kavanaugh's record and the 300 rulings he's made. I mean, his conservative credentials, I just saw a rating today, are second only to a nominated judge, to Clarence Thomas. So if you're one of these holdout Republican never-Trumpers losers, what do you say now?
Well, you know, they have no argument. The Bill Kristols of the world, these Republicans who have opposed Trump at every turn. You know, I saw a very interesting tweet today, John. I know tweet isn't news, but it was amazing. Chris Saliza of CNN had a tweet out, and it said, if I know Trump, he's going to pick the woman because it's all about the look, right? And then he picks Judge Kavanaugh, and his next tweet was, very predictable, he picked Kavanaugh. I mean, you know, these guys are amazing. And if you saw the text of the woman's march, they put an email out before the judge's name was even in the email, and they were opposing Judge XX before it was even out for all of the wrong reasons, right? And it just goes to show, right, how bad and how poorly managed the left is. They are so adversarial to this president that they can't see past someone who's superiorly qualified to serve in the highest court in the land. The conservatives, Leonard Leo, who was instrumental in moving this forward. I give credit to Don McGahn in the White House counsel's office.
Yes.
And all of the people, because, John, for the second time in this administration's history that we've had a second Supreme Court nominee, it was held tight. It was held close to the vest. There were no leaks coming out of the building. And it was done exceptionally well, and I'm very happy the way the administration got this achieved.
Look, I just got to ask you that, and I'm glad you brought that up, Corey. You and I both have been very upset about the number of leaks that come out of this White House on a continual basis, all designed at harming the president or harming somebody close to him. Have they now got that under control? Because based on the fact that no one knew this actually was going to get done until he made the announcement at 9:05 p.m., has things changed in the West Wing now, as far as leaks are concerned?
Look, I don't think they've changed enough, to be candid with you, John. And look, I'm very critical of the staff that continues to surround the president that has their own agenda and not his agenda.
Right.
Right. There's still too many of those people there. There are too many of them that need to be purged out of that building. They didn't support Trump when he was running for office. They don't support his agenda. They don't support his philosophy. They think that they are the permanent government, and they don't understand that they work for the president. But on this particular case, it was a small knit group of individuals led by Don McGahn and a very small communications team. And maybe that's the problem, right? Maybe the difference now is that we've got Bill Shine, who's the deputy chief of staff for communications, who's instilling some discipline into the White House communications team, something that's been long overdue.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe he has said to them, if you leak out information, I will find you and I will terminate you, because Bill Shine is a professional.
Mm-hmm.
He was the co-president of Fox News. He has brought a professional.